Listen up. I hate to have commercials interrupt this interview, so I'm going to tell you about three sponsors quickly now, and then we're going to go right into the program, starting with Walker Corporate Law. If you need a lawyer who understands the startup world and the tech community, I want you to go to walkercorporatelaw.com. Next, I want to tell you about Shopify. When your friend asks you, "How can I sell something online?" I want you to send them to Shopify and explain to them that Shopify stores are easy to set up. They increase sales and they'll make your friends' products look great. Shopify. Finally, I want to tell you about Grasshopper. Do you want a phone number that people can call and then press one for sales, two for tech support, etc., and have all of the calls be routed to the right person's cell phone? Well, get your number from grasshopper.com. All right, let's get started. Hey there, freedom fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I am the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And this is the story of a lawyer who quit practicing law and went on to build a multi-million dollar licensing business, and of the shocking thing that happened after that. Alexis Neely is the founder of LawBusinessMentors.com, where she teaches lawyers the business skills they need, and she is the chief visionary officer of Eyes Wide Open Life, where she offers a radical new perspective on making your personal finance and business decisions. Welcome, Alexis.
Thank you. It is great to be here. I love that your people are freedom fighters.
That's right.
Yes to that, freedom.
You know what? I was teasing the shocking thing that happened to you. Why don't we just skip and go right to it? You filed for bankruptcy.
I did.
Does that suck?
No.
It doesn't suck? It's not even painful?
It was honestly the best thing that ever happened to me. Now, I don't recommend it for everyone. It's not the easiest path. And at the same time, I do recommend that you build your business without being afraid of it.
Without being afraid of bankruptcy.
Say that again?
Without being afraid of bankruptcy.
Yeah, without being afraid of bankruptcy, without being afraid to go into debt, without being afraid to ruin your credit score. And without being afraid to ultimately, if necessary, file bankruptcy. As I said, I don't recommend it for everybody, but it was absolutely critical to my path. And it allowed me to get to the bottom of what is actually the truth about money, debt, credit, and building businesses.
What about this? I sometimes feel like a fraud if I ask a guest a question about how to get traffic and I go, I should know this by now. How can I possibly respect myself if I'm looking out at the audience and saying, I interviewed all these entrepreneurs and I learned something and now I'm about to ask a question like an amateur? The bigger fear is if you teach finance and then you file for bankruptcy, doesn't that make you feel like, how can I look at the audience in the face? How can I ask people to trust me with decisions? Wasn't there a moment where you felt that?
The moments that I felt that were actually before I filed bankruptcy.
Tell me about that feeling.
Yeah, that feeling was that I knew deep inside of me that the answers to freedom, financial freedom, and all of these things that we think that we want when we go into business were not about saving money. We're not about spending less. We're not about saving for retirement. We're not about paying off debt. I knew it, but I wasn't living it. Instead, I was living this very conditioned life, in fact, very trapped. So I'll go back to 2009. Businesses are making about $2 million that year. I'm appearing on all the top television shows, Good Morning America, Today Show, O'Reilly, all of them. You know, straight hair, fancy makeup, no feathers, no little jewels on my face. And as I'm going on these shows, I know that I'm just regurgitating the party line.
What's the party line that you were regurgitating?
Save for retirement, pay off your debt, be responsible, do the right thing, build a business so that you can be successful.
And were you really doing that?
I was doing that, but I wasn't successful, Andrew. I wasn't successful on the inside.
What do you
mean?
My
relationship with my kids was in the toilet. They were back then 7 and 10. And I had sworn to myself when I first started building a business, when I went into my law practice, you know, back in 2003, that by the time my kids were those ages, 7 and 10, I would slow down. I would spend more time with them. But that wasn't even on the horizon, because in my mind, I couldn't relax until I had $40 million in the bank. Because $40 million invested at 5% would throw off $2 million a year, and then I could relax. But until then, I had to work, 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 be a workaholic, show up in a very specific way, blow my hair straight, put on the makeup, show up, smile, you know, follow the party line. And it wasn't true to who I really was. And again, I had this voice in the back of my head saying, Alexis, you know this isn't true. You know that there is no actual saving for retirement. There is no point at which you're going to have enough money saved that it's going to be enough. And even though your business is bringing in $2 million, you've only got $20,000 in the bank.
Why do you end up with just $20,000 when your business is doing so much in revenue?
Because there's overhead and there's expenses.
What kind of expenses did you have at that point?
Huge payroll. I'd hired a coach for $100,000. You know, all of the things that come up along the way. Doing media is a very expensive proposition. Like, that's not cheap. You have to fly yourself everywhere. Back then, I had to fly first class because that's what I was taught. Like, if I fly first class, then I'm going to be more effective. And in some respects, it's true, but, you know, there's a cost to that. Just getting my hair done, you know, is $100 a pop, and I had to get it done every time that I went on TV. The clothes, you know, you got to buy clothes every time that you're going on TV. And all of these little things add up. And then, of course, you have to live the lifestyle, right? Because if you're holding yourself out there as this super successful person, then you have to be living that. So, of course, I had a Mercedes, and I had a house on the beach in Hermosa, and I had to have full-time childcare for my kids because I'm a working entrepreneurial mom and can't do that without, you know, someone taking care of the kids. I was, you know, divorced, so I had to know that everything was taken care of. And then just the amount of money it took to run the businesses, and believe me, I made a lot of bad decisions when it came to investing in growing my businesses because I'm a big risk taker. So
what's a bad decision that you made?
Oh, like I gave some guys $10,000 because they promised they could generate me leads and they were basically scam artists.
I see. And you're saying I got to run quickly. I don't have enough time to make sure that everyone is legit. I did a little bit of investigation. Give me the traffic that I need. Give me the leads that I need. And if it doesn't work out, hey, that's the cost of doing business. And you were running so then you had $20,000 in the bank. How did you end up going bankrupt then?
So at the time, I mean, the $20,000 in the bank, now I realize actually that's fine. That's actually fine. And I was making enough money to pay the bills every month, but my life was not in alignment with how I really wanted to be. So, for example, big wake-up call. I'm sitting on the soundstage of Nancy Grace, which, do you know who Nancy Grace is? Super abrasive.
Yes, a little bit.
Okay, super abrasive lawyer type on television. And basically,
CNN, I think, is that right?
CNN.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And basically, when the television people called, I went. So that meant that 4 hours of my day was gone. Hair and makeup, black car to the studio from Redondo Beach to, you know, downtown Los Angeles or Hollywood, wherever it was. And I'm sitting there in front of the camera. And you have to stay there for the whole show. And this show happened to be about Tiger Woods. Do you remember back when he had his divorce? And I'm sitting there waiting to go on. And I realized that I was there to gossip about another human being.
Yeah.
Gossip about a person. And that I was contributing to the world negative 100 at best, maybe negative 1,000. And that is not what I was devoting my life to. And I made a promise to myself that day that I would never do TV again until I could do transformational TV. I didn't even know what transformational TV was, but it sounded better than what I was doing. And I really love TV. Let me let you know that. I love
TV. What do you love about being on TV?
It's the one time that my mind completely shuts off. Generally, not this one time. But generally speaking, when I'm in front of the camera and I'm all done up and I'm looking the perfect way, I know exactly what to say. I know how to say it. I know how to speak to the camera without.
What about that's? You can do so many other things really well. There's something about television, about having people watch you, about being a celebrity. What was it about it that appealed to you?
I have a deep, deep, deep desire to be seen.
Where does that come from?
Oh, gosh. Conditioning. You know, my parents, like, really thought all of that was super cool growing up. Like, I was the pretty one and my sister was the smart one. So
it seems to come from a personal need, too. Like, for me, I wanted a lot of attention. And it's because I wanted women to want me.
Oh.
And that's
okay,
where
good.
It came
that's
from.
Good. Okay.
So okay. For you, on a get personal with me. What
Andrew,
was it that you
asked,
wanted?
You ask great questions.
Thank you.
I had to prove something to the people I went to high school with.
What did you have to prove?
That I was smart, that I was as good as them, that I could be something in the world, and I wasn't the person that they said I was.
What did they say you were?
Oh, I was the high school slut.
That's what they
Which
said.
Which turns out I actually am that too.
What do you mean? Were you really?
Oh, yeah, I totally was. But I thought that was a bad thing. And I shamed myself for it a lot.
So were you the high school slut because you were trying to prove something and get people to like you? Or were you just that kind of free spirit at the time and there was a label that I see that's what it was?
Yeah.
And so you wanted to shove it in their face.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to prove it to them. I wanted to prove to them that I am smart, that I am capable. I mean, that desire drove me for a long time. I graduated first in my class from Georgetown Law. Why? Because I wanted to prove to everybody that I wasn't stupid. When I started Georgetown Law, I was certain that I was the stupidest person there. Because I went to a state college and everybody else went to Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. What I didn't realize is that the people who went to Harvard, Princeton, and Yale that were at Georgetown, they weren't the ones who did the best at Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. So it turns out maybe I was the smartest person there because I came from a state school. But actually, I wasn't. The truth is that I just studied more than anybody else, and I studied more than anybody else out of fear. So I was living my life based on fear. I built businesses that were bringing in $2 million because I was afraid of running out of money, because I was afraid of not being good enough, not because it was true to who I actually was or what I really needed. Today, we have businesses that are doing $2 million, but not to fill a hole, which is exactly what you're getting at.
Do you still get to keep the money from your businesses, or is it under some kind of trust?
No, I do get to. I don't. Okay, let's take a step back. I get paid very well by my businesses now. I keep all of that. I don't own my businesses, so when I speak about my businesses, they're not owned by me personally. I have very good asset protection set up such that my businesses are owned by a series of irrevocable trusts. Remember, I was an estate planning lawyer. A series of irrevocable trusts that are for the benefit of me, that are for the benefit of my children, but are controlled by someone else. It's the best form of asset protection you can have. And glad we're mentioning it, because almost all company founders should set their businesses up this way, even if you're not afraid of bankruptcy. There's other risks that could come along. And you want your companies always protected from those risks.
So it's in a trust. So if for some reason you go bankrupt or someone says, hey, you know what? This woman has a lot of money. I think I slipped on the floor of her house at a party recently. She better pay me tons of money. Say, look, I don't have the money. The trusts have it.
That's exactly right.
How do we set something like that up?
You got to work with a lawyer, and you need to work with a lawyer who's specifically trained in how to do domestic asset protection planning. This is not offshore asset protection planning. It's domestic. And it's a little complicated because you cannot set it up for yourself. A family member or a friend needs to set it up for you. There's not a lot of lawyers out there who know how to do it. I do have lawyers that I've trained over the past several years. They're called personal family lawyers. And you could talk with a personal family lawyer more about it. Or a creative business lawyer. Maybe the business lawyers might even have more information about it. But it's something that what I find when I talk to most business owners about it, they're reluctant to do because it's a big investment at the beginning of your company. If you wait until your company is already set up, it's actually much harder to do. But when you set it up at the beginning of your company, it's a lot easier to do because you're basically having a trust set up and it's going to start the company for you as opposed to you having to try and have the trust buy your business once it already has value.
I did one of those. You end up with a stack of paperwork, first of all, and you end up with a lot of upfront time and setup, and then you have to pay annually, right? And you have to, so that's why a lot of people don't do it. Because you're just getting started, you're trying to figure out, is this even going to go anywhere? And the reason that you were able to do it is because you had enough of a track record. And I guess by that point, actually, why were you able to do it? You just came out of bankruptcy. Why did you suddenly say, I'm going to put all this money in upfront? No,
I did this many years before my bankruptcy.
So you were able to protect your money in bankruptcy?
Yeah, the companies.
Oh, no wonder you're smiling so much. I was asking you about bankruptcy. I didn't see a horrified look. So you kept the companies.
The trusts kept the company.
I see. Yes. And you just, okay.
Yeah. There's some part of me that, I think always knew that bankruptcy would be part of my path. I'd once heard about Jack Canfield and he's been through bankruptcy, and then Brendan Burchard and he's been through bankruptcy, and Donald Trump, of course, has been through bankruptcy. And I looked at, what do all of these entrepreneurs have in common that would lead them to bankruptcy? It was that they recognized that you have to take risks in business. And in fact, that's one of my messages that I'm now bringing out after the bankruptcy, after having gone through the bankruptcy, is that there's so many people who are sacrificing their lives. And this is where I was. I was sacrificing my life to pay back my debt and locked into a business model that kept me trapped in the made-up face, the straight hair, showing up in a certain way. And when I would break free of that, my team members would say, Alexis, you can't say that. Like, if they heard me talking about being the class slut, they would freak out. Like, that is not okay.
Why didn't you freak out when you said that right now? I look at people because I know I like to push the boundaries, but I notice where I push too far, and that's why I love video. You were fine. You had a calmness about you. Why doesn't that make you feel like, ooh, I can't believe I just admitted that?
I've done the work on it.
How'd you do the work?
Tremendous personal work on it. How?
Yeah. What'd you do?
I've confronted my shame around my sexuality in a number of different ways. Tantra classes, therapists, coaches, being now part of a community of people who support all of me, going to Burning Man.
What was the last part?
Have you been to Burning Man?
No, I haven't. What's the community that you're part of?
I'm part of a community of people that come out of Burning Man. A lot of them live in San Francisco, and they accept me exactly as I am. They're entrepreneurs. They're living this life of sovereignty where they get to show up exactly as they are, without shame, without guilt, without fear. They're not trying to prove anything. And I'll be honest, when I first connected with this community, actually through my coach, Brian Franklin, you may have interviewed Brian. Yeah, Brian was my coach several years ago, and I thought he was coaching me on my business, and he was, but what I really realize now is that he was coaching me on how to be all of me without shame, and he did it very sneakily. Like, I didn't know that's what it was about. Probably wouldn't have hired him had I known, because that's not what I was looking for. I was looking for how to actually transition my business more to my team, which is what I thought that I wanted. What he helped me realize is that I didn't want that team to support my business because they didn't really support the me that I am, the slutty, free spirit, you know, sexual girl. They wanted me in a box, and that I was never going to be able to do what I'm really here to do in the world, which ultimately is about helping people to live beyond shame, guilt, and fear. I do it in a number of different ways, and the businesses don't say that on the outside, but, you know, at the core, that I never would be able to do that from the box.
You started out as a lawyer, then you started your own practice, right?
Yeah.
So you took the right path going out of Georgetown Law School. Then at one point you realize, I'm going to build a business outside of it. That's the business that I mentioned at the top of the interview. What was that business?
That business is the business that still exists today. It's called New Law Business Model. Our website is at lawbusinessmentors.com. And it didn't start off that way. It was originally called Family Wealth Planning Institute. And it was a business training lawyers on how to serve families with the new law business model that I had created in my own law practice.
What's this model? I keep talking about, or I started at the top of the interview, confronting the toughest questions in the interview about what you did wrong, about bankruptcy, yeah. And we'll get back to that. But I want to know also what you did right. So yeah. what was this model that worked for you?
So this model was one where I was no longer focusing on the next new client, the next new client, the next new client. Wasn't billing anything on an hourly basis, and instead was building lifetime relationships with my clients in which they knew that their plan was going to work when their family needed it the most. And what was the most radical part about it at the time is that I narrowly focused my client on serving family, my practice on serving families with young children. That was the turning point.
And you created a licensing program for $997. Anyone who went through this program got licensed. How many people did you get to pay it?
The first time that we offered it was back in 2007. I think we enrolled 13 lawyers in it, mm-hmm. which was now all of a sudden a $13,000 a month. It wasn't $997 once. It was $997 a month.
A month.
A month.
And what
yes.
were they getting for that?
Back then, they were getting basically everything that I did in my practice, all of my forms, all of my checklists, all of my processes, all of my procedures. I had created a product on how lawyers could engage nearly every client that called their, every prospect that called their office.
Okay.
Step-by-step system for how to answer your phone, what to say when you answer your phone, what to send out after somebody makes an appointment, how to make sure they don't cancel their appointments. Still one of our best-selling products today, been upgraded a number of times. Because, you know, back then, like, I didn't know anything about creating products. And they, even though I offered so little relative to what we offer today through that business, they loved it. It transformed their practices. Many of those lawyers that joined are still with us today, to this day, still with us.
What did you do right that got them to sign up? And then I'm going to ask you about this thing that you told Jeremy in the pre-interview.
Yeah.
What did you do right that worked out for such a to be so successful with your first product out of the gate?
Well, I wasn't so successful with my first product out of the gate. My very first product was something called the Kids Protection Planning Kit.
Okay.
And I was actually a miserable failure with it. I invested about $15,000 in creating it and then was dancing around when I sold my first one for $397 and then okay. couldn't figure out how to sell the rest. Took out an ad buy on the Blogger network. And spent $5,000, and they pulled it within 30 seconds because it was so in your face, over the top, red headlines, alarm, 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 that the moms wouldn't run it on their sites. You know, I was a Dan Kennedy student, so I was just following.
That's his model to get yeah. people's attention.
Yeah, what he taught, but it doesn't work. You know, you got to adapt it. It's not the same for moms. And so I didn't know that, and have learned a lot since then. But that was my first product. Then, and I was failing. I was into my line of credit. I had lots of revenue coming in, but I was spending it all trying to figure out how to make this leap from one-to-one service to the one-to-many. When I went to a Dan Kennedy event and met a guy there who I ended up hiring as my coach, he coached me to launch my next product, which was the client engagement system. On with that product, we did a phone call, one phone call, my very first teleseminar ever. We did $117,000 in sales. And at that time, I was really running around screaming.
No, it's really, what did he tell you to do differently?
He told me to focus on creating a product that was for the lawyers, not for the consumers. For the lawyers, that was something that I did in my office that was extremely unique, that provided a great value that other lawyers needed to know how to do that they didn't know how to do. And then he literally step by step held my hand, interviewed me on the call, walked me through the whole process of having a teleseminar, writing the script for the teleseminar, writing all the emails to go out ahead of time. I didn't have a list, building the list, all of it. We had 750 people registered for that call. My biggest fear was that we'd sell one because I did not have the product done. But we didn't. We sold $117,000 worth. Over 6 weeks, we did about $200,000 of that product. Half the people returned it.
Why? That's what I was getting at from your conversation with Jeremy.
Yeah. because I didn't know how to build a product on the fly. And Dave didn't know at the time really either. So what I put together as the product was the kind of product that you are either going to open the box and be so committed to figuring out how to apply it, because you had to go through different notebooks and, you know, it's kind of messy, that you're going to apply it and get immediate results, or you're going to look at it and see, whoa, this is too much, and send it back.
I see.
You know, I didn't have any stick campaigns set up. I didn't know any of that back then. So half the people returned it, but half the people used it and started sending me unsolicited testimonials about how within the very first time using it, they've increased their fees $2,000. Their clients are telling them that they loved the process of working with them, that they're so happy to pay their fees, like things that, you know, don't happen to lawyers a lot of the time. And so over the years, we've upgraded the product, of course. And this
guy is David D. That's the name of the person.
Yeah, his name is Dave D. Today, he is the chief marketing officer of Dan Kennedy's business, Glazer Kennedy Inner Circle. But back then, he was a magician turned entrepreneurial coach.
I mean, literally a magician.
Yeah, literally. He's a great
magician. Oh, I thought you were saying he's a magician because he turned around things for you. No, he was a magician who decided he was going to be an entrepreneurial coach. And unlike so many entrepreneurial coaches, he actually knew what he was doing.
Well, right, because he had built his magic business from, you know, 3 shows a month and failing to doing 57 shows a month using Dan Kennedy's systems. And then he had started teaching other magicians how to do the same thing and then branched into working with entrepreneurs, which is when I caught him.
All right. So at this point, now you're in the product business, not the selling your time for hour business. You're growing. You're writing a book. You start to write a book.
Right. What's
the book and how did it do?
Yeah, the book is called Wear Clean Underwear. It is the best-selling book on legal planning for parents. And if you're wondering why wear clean underwear, it's because, you know, your mom tells you to wear clean underwear in case you're in an accident. But once you're a parent, wearing clean underwear alone is not enough. There's important legal planning steps to take.
I saw you on that's what I was watching just as you and I started this call. I saw you on, what was it, the Today Show.
Today Show, Good Morning America. Yes. It was a phenomenal hit, a bestseller. You know, ran my first bestseller campaign for it. And more than the bestseller campaign, it was all the TV that I got to start doing, which was, for me, super exciting because that was like the pinnacle of success.
And this is where you were starting to do millions in sales. And here's what you told Jeremy Weiss, our pre-interviewer. You said, I was constantly hearing this message in your head. Alexis, you can't do that. You can't say that. You can't write that. You can't wear that. You'll hurt your business.
That's right.
Is it really like that in your head, just that chatter constantly saying, oh, why are you saying that? Why are you wearing that? Why are you about to tell them? Why aren't you hiding this? What if they find out? Is that what's going on?
It was, and it wasn't just in my head. I was hearing it from my team. The people that I had hired to work with me.
Oh, you mean literally hearing it from people?
Yes.
Okay.
Like literally from people. And then, you know, I'm a big believer that everything we see outside of ourselves is a reflection of our own internal consciousness. So I was getting that reflected back to me from my team, from lawyers, you know, out there who did not like what I was doing at all.
What do you mean? What didn't they like about it?
It was too in your face. You know, I was doing sales and marketing, and a lot of lawyers are not okay with sales and marketing. It's not professional. And the true me, like the real me, is not a straight-laced traditional lawyer. Like, this is the real me. And so when I would bring out the real me, the lawyer community would make fun of me. It was like a repeat of high school.
I see.
And it was perfect, actually, because I needed to have that repeat of high school as an adult when I, as an adult woman, could deal with it. But I had to learn how to deal with it as an adult woman and not respond to it as I did in high school.
And what were you doing to respond to it as an adult?
Well, I didn't really actually handle it that well at first. And I was torn between shutting myself down or really going over the top.
Okay.
And preemptively rejecting everything that I thought was rejecting me. So I almost killed the lawyer business. In fact, at one point, I was that close to giving it away to the woman that I had hired to support me in that business. And I remember her on a call. We were on a call together. This was after we'd had a, I'd fired her, and she, and then I felt really bad. I felt really, really, really bad. And so I called her and I was apologizing and just this whole like cathartic crying thing. And she said, you know, you don't even like the lawyer business, which wasn't true, but she was kind of feeding that into my head. It doesn't let you be who you are. Why don't you just give it to me? And at the time, I thought that maybe that was the right idea, because if I couldn't be who I really was, and all I wanted was the work to continue. If I couldn't serve the lawyers as the way they needed to be served, then maybe she could. Maybe she could take my work and build it and grow it and really give them what they needed. And so I said, okay.
Okay. And did you do it? Did you actually give her the company?
No. She sent me a one-page document that I was supposed to sign over and send back to her. And when I looked at the document, the voice I heard in my head was, Alexis, are you crazy? This is your life work. You're just in a crisis moment. Don't sign it over to her. And I didn't. Thank God. Thank God. She did go and start a competing business, competing to some degree, as much as, you know, she can't really compete, but to some degree. And I then spent the next year completely deconstructing the business and looking at what is it that really provides so much value to the lawyers that they are willing to pay for it for the rest of their business lives.
What was that?
It was my creativity. There was a group of lawyers. What I basically did is I cut the investment in the program down to a bare minimum, and I let go of the entire team. So I was able to run the business with basically just me and a few outsourced people. And what I noticed is that one of the lawyers said to me, wow, Alexis, you have priced this so that I will never leave. And then I looked at what could I deliver at that price point, because we had been charging $7,500 upfront and $1,500 a month. So I brought it down to $497 a month. And what I was delivering was a monthly marketing campaign for him to use in his local community, presentations that he could use in his local community. And at that point, really just that, besides the systems, you know,
you
we had our
he goes out to like a Kiwanis Club or a Rotary Club. You tell him what to say.
I tell him what to say, what to do at the end of the meeting, how to follow up, all of that. How to set up his own presentations with Mommy and Me groups. It's a very niche, unique thing that we do. So, you know, really opening up a whole other market. And then I started to add things in, like now we provide a weekly article that the lawyers can use in their local blog or newsletter, a monthly newsletter that they can send out in their local community. So I started to add things in that weren't dependent on me. So now, whereas before, I was getting on the phone with all of them once a month. I'm getting on the phone with them. No, we cut that out. Nobody's getting on the phone with me again. And it's been about now it's that we've really started to rebuild it. About a year and a half ago, I decided, you know what? I can do this. I can be me, and I can still serve the lawyers. And when the haters were talking about me after that, I started to really like it, like really like it. It was good when the haters were talking about me, which was a huge sea change. I mean, that was like completely radical, a shift.
Did you have a period in your life where you could let yourself just go? I mean, before you started in business, or was
no.
it only, no.
No,
ever. Did it happen after this incident that you told me about with Nancy Grace, where you decided I'm not going to be this? And then you packed up your bags, as I heard it, and you moved. What'd you do?
Right. So in the midst of all of this, this time period that I'm telling you about, I sold the Mercedes, we moved to Colorado. So that was the first step, was January 1st, 2010, moved to Colorado, got away from LA and all the TV stuff. And I thought that would be the solution. But really, it was just the perpetuation, because we moved into this, you know, 5,800 square foot house on a lake, had the Mercedes. I'm spending 16 hours a day in my little office while my kids come home from school and go downstairs and play video games till 9 o'clock at night. That was not it.
So the rest of it wasn't changed. Were you still married at the time?
Oh, no. My marriage ended in 2005 when I was in my law practice. But my ex-husband was living with me. He actually moved with us to Colorado.
Wait, so you got a divorce. But your ex-husband was not only living with you, but he moved to Colorado with you.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, he actually still lives with me today.
That's got to be tough for dating.
No, my partner actually is just upstairs. They get along great. It's unique.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really good for the kids, and we've figured out how to make it work. Okay. We are moving in July, and he's going to get his own place now. But it was really what we needed to do. We needed to come together to be able to really support the kids, and ultimately, that was not the answer either. Just moving to Colorado was not the answer. I had to let it all go and move to a farm. Ended up buying this farm in Berthoud, Colorado, and had actually bought it for my ex-husband to start a business, but that got screwed up. And I realize now that universally, you know, like from a spirit-based perspective, I didn't buy it for my husband to start a business. I bought it so that I could go live there when I needed to be able to let go of everything.
I see.
And I did. I let go of the Mercedes, the house, the personal chef, the housekeeper, the personal assistant, my entire team, brought it all in so that I could decrease my expenses as much as possible and stop doing anything for the money. And look at, okay, if I don't need any money because I've got really enough coming in just in this recurring revenue from the products I've created. There's another business too, which today is called Eyes Wide Open Life, that, you know, had some products, got enough money coming in from that I never have to take on another private client if I don't want to. I don't have to do anything more than what I'm doing. What is my life like? And it was like it is now, where I have an amazing relationship with my kids. There's no more working at night. Very little, if any, working on the weekends. And only like if there's something super exciting going on and I really want to. I have just started taking on the occasional private client when I'm really super drawn to do so. But instead, what I've done is I looked at, do I still want to serve lawyers? The answer was absolutely, unequivocally, yes. How do I want to do it? And now the business that we've rebuilt with actually my partner's support is a business. It's a real business. It's not dependent on me, although I play a major role in it. And we are back up to 100 lawyers. The investment in the program is back up to $997 a month. It'll likely increase again because we're about to include a custom Infusionsoft application that we're building for our lawyers.
And if they have Infusionsoft, they get to use your application to make Infusionsoft work better for lawyers.
To automate all of their client and prospect communications and to streamline how they interact with the members of their team. And, you know, everything's tasked out and it's all the logic is built in.
I'm sorry, but I still don't see where the bankruptcy came in, because it seems like everything you're doing, maybe you're scaling down at times, but you're scaling up also. I don't see anything that would lead to bankruptcy yet. And the other thing is, I don't see that you ever had a period in your life where you can just say, screw it all, I'm going to be myself. I'm going to just do whatever I feel like. Because even when you went to the farm, you were still a mom. You were still running your business, right? Did you ever get a chance to just say, forget the world, I'm going to do what I want and find out who I am and how to balance who I am with what people want?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not ever going to not be a mom, right? So I have to. That has to be part of it. But yeah, 2010 to 2011 was really that time. 2010, 2011, I moved to the farm. I stopped taking on private clients, making enough money just from the recurring revenue that I don't have to do anything for the money. And that was that time period of complete letting go, complete total letting go. And I remember actually my partner said to me at one point during it, and believe me, I'm glossing over it. This was a very challenging time. I'm making it seem like it was all very easy, but the time leading up to it, which was probably summer of 2011, I was in tremendous emotional turmoil. I mean, crying every single day, trying to hold on to the big house and the car. I mean, it was like, you know, like I'm getting ripped away in many ways.
I see. And your self-identity, I imagine, is connected to it. You have
completely.
This Mercedes.
I mean, my self-identity is connected to me showing up in a certain way, looking a certain way, having a certain credit score.
And the only reason that it went away is because financially you had to let it go.
Had to is a strong word. I chose to in order to get the space that I needed to discover the truth of who I was.
I see.
And I actually, prior to this happening at the end of 2009, I actually developed a process. It's called the Money Map to Freedom, that gave me the structure that I needed to be able to do this. Back then, when I started to go through this kind of crisis experience, I said to my CFO, Keith, I can't keep doing things the way I'm doing them. I need you to tell me, how much money do I actually need to live? And he couldn't answer the question. And so I developed this process that helped me to identify how much did I actually need, because $40 million was a lie. And that was, of course, what I thought. And so I put together this process where I could look at what did I really want my life to be like at four different levels. Minimum to be happy, preferred if I could afford it, no limits, and now, like the actual reality of the now. When I did that process, what I saw is that, and I did it a couple times over, but by the time I was ready to let go of everything, I saw that I could live on, at the bare minimum, moving to the farm, not paying the mortgage, not paying back my debt, giving up the Mercedes, all of it, letting go of all the team and just running the business myself, I could live on $5,000 a month. That $5,000 a month was coming in from the businesses, easy. You know, I could do a couple affiliate things, I could, you know, sell a product here and there, really low stress. And that is exactly what I did for leading up to the bankruptcy, as I brought my income down to really not nothing, $5,000 a month, but for me that was nothing. Let my bank accounts go lower than I'd ever let them go. Even in law school, Andrew, I had $10,000 in my bank account. That was like my minimum. And I'm on student loans and putting myself through law school. Like, my parents did not have money growing up, so I paid for everything myself, but I always had that $10,000 in the bank. And I let it go. I let it go just down to nothing and found my liberation in that. That's where I found that who I really am. And during this, by the way, we haven't mentioned this other part of me yet, this other person, this other persona emerged. Her name is Ali Shanti. I didn't talk to Jeremy about Ali Shanti.
No, hang on a sec. Well, let me just make sure that I'm writing down Ali Shanti. I want to talk to you about that, but just to be clear, it's because you said, I'm not going to support this lifestyle anymore, and I know I'm a little locked into paying the mortgage, paying for the car, et cetera. I'm going to intentionally decide to earn less and to not pay for those debts and let myself go bankrupt, and then I could reemerge with some freedom and some space. Okay.
And then I can reemerge as who I really am. Then I can
Ali Shanti.
I didn't know that at the time, but yes, Ali Shanti. I could find out who I am. I could really rebuild things with the right foundation. And there was a time period, really this time last year, I would say, maybe 18 months ago, where I remember going into the grocery store and I only brought $100 cash in with me and having to put groceries back. I wanted to have that experience because I know that I am here on this planet to help people who are having that experience. And I cannot help people who are having that experience without having had that experience myself. I cannot help people by being the girl who graduated first in her class from Georgetown and built these multiple million-dollar businesses. And you're going to trust me when I tell you to stop saving money and stop paying off your debt? Bullshit. Like, you're going to call me. I'm going to be a fraud if I don't go through it myself. And so I did. I went through it myself. And it's been about almost a year now since we've been rebuilding. August of 2012, I filed bankruptcy. And here's what's really cool about filing bankruptcy. The day after you file bankruptcy, you can start making money again. And there's so many people that are keeping themselves trapped in the mindset of, I can't make money because I owe all this money. I can't make money because I don't have access to the resources. I can't take on debt. And we have to break free of that. Debt is a tool to be used to help you build wealth. It is nothing more, nothing less. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It is a tool. Your credit score is no indication of your self-worth, despite what magazines and all these other things tell you. It's not true. It's what's keeping you a slave, and it is my absolute mission and commitment to free you of that once and for all.
Because people start to get down about themselves, start to define themselves as losers because they have this big debt.
Absolutely. I experienced it, like viscerally experienced that myself, where it would have been very easy for me to get trapped there, even with all of the resources that I have access to. My mind, my degree, my, you know.
But you at least had a business that was kicking off enough cash and was protected so that you could continue to earn a living from it.
I did have that.
When we have debt, we feel like, all right, I could declare bankruptcy, but that doesn't cure it doesn't solve the problem. How am I going to feed myself? How am I going to feed my family? What did you do in that situation?
I had that exact same fear, and I completely understand it. And the key is that you've got to use the available resources that you have to invest in learning how to create yourself an income stream that is not dependent on corporations, the government, or anybody else for that matter.
So how do you do that? That's not an easy thing to do. I've seen people struggle with that for a long time. They sign up to all these coaches, they sign up to all the websites, they read the blogs, and they still don't.
So I believe that it begins with knowing what I call your money map number. Knowing exactly how much money do you actually need to live now, not with saving for retirement, not with paying off your debt, but to actually live now. What is your minimum amount to be happy? Preferred if you could afford it. No limits, maybe you don't need to know right now because you just need to, you know, take one step at a time. When you know that number, it's incredibly freeing. Most people don't know that number. They have a vague sense, they have an idea. So you get to know that number. Then you can focus your energy and attention on, okay, how many hours am I going to put in doing what to earn that number? And what is the business model that I'm going to use to do it? And I find that most people are failing in business because they're building a business model that is based on the wrong entrepreneurial archetype. And so everybody always wants to know, what is an entrepreneurial archetype? What is that? We're not going to be able to go in depth on it now, but there's basically two basic archetypes that I've identified for people who have a service to offer, okay, not products, not manufacturing, a service to offer and want money in exchange for that service. And if you identify your entrepreneurial archetype, you can then build a business model in alignment with that archetype and stop struggling to provide value in the world. Because that's ultimately all it comes down to, is a struggle to provide value and to get paid for the value that you provide.
So if I understand my archetype, then I'm not going to struggle to add value to the world?
If you understand your archetype, you're going to be able to structure your business model in alignment with that archetype so that you're no longer, for example, hiring a mentor who is a star archetype, for example, when you're a sage archetype, trying to build your business the way that their business looks or the way that their business is, but it's not in alignment with who you really are.
I see. Okay.
And then you struggle and you beat yourself up and you wonder. My son just walked in. You struggle and you wonder, why am I failing? Why, I'm not good enough. And then you get in this mindset of beating yourself up. But instead, when you begin to realize, oh, I'm not there, or that's not my archetype, and instead you can build a business that's actually in alignment with who you really are, everything changes. I built two businesses not in alignment with who I really was. And in both cases, I ended up sabotaging them in some way or another because I couldn't maintain it. I couldn't maintain this persona that wasn't really me.
Okay, let's get to who you really are. Ali Shanti.
Ali Shanti.
What is this? I actually saw it online. I forget where, but you and I had a couple of interviews scheduled and we couldn't make it work. And I would come across these things and I'd go, maybe she's just avoiding me because she's worried I'm going to ask about these personal things.
I'll tell you why I was
good with it.
I was avoiding you. I was avoiding
you. Oh, good. This is so open of you to say it. Tell me why you were avoiding me.
I wasn't ready to speak with you. The business model, not the new law business model side of things, not the lawyer business, but the other business that we haven't even talked about yet, Eyes Wide Open, was in flux. And I couldn't interview with you when that business was still in such question. I didn't know where it was going. I didn't know what I was going to do with it. And ultimately, I was only able to say yes when I had clarity about that.
Why does not having clarity on the business mean that you don't feel comfortable doing the interview?
Because ultimately, this interview is going to be seen by people for years and years. They're going to come back to this as they join Mixergy. And I really respect Mixergy and your audience of freedom fighters. That's the people that I serve.
Thank you.
And so if I was to speak to you from a place of lack of clarity, my message would be of far less impact.
Is it also that you doubt yourself, that you wouldn't feel as solid and grounded if you can't articulate what you're doing? That you don't feel whole if you can't say, this is what I'm doing and what it means?
I could have felt whole because I knew my message, but I didn't have the vehicle for sharing that message in enough order. And a big part I'm very transparent. So I'm all about sharing my process as I'm in it. I do that on my blog, and people have said I do it too much. But I knew that this interview that was going to be out there for a long time was going to reach a lot of people, and I wanted to make the most of it, needed to wait until I had the clarity. Again, not so much about the message, because I had that clarity, but that the vehicle that would be supporting that message, which is this Eyes Wide Open Life business, was more cohesive. It's still not completely done, by the way. It's in its rebuilding phase, but at least now I know that it is going to be rebuilt. I'm not even running it anymore. Danielle, who you've interacted with, I think, a few times, I've now given her, in many ways, the business, like gave it to her.
To run, but you still own it.
Well, I don't own it. It's owned by a trust.
Right.
Basically, I have given her total control.
Okay, but the trust will still own it.
The trust will still own it, the assets of it. But if you look at a business like Eyes Wide Open Life or any information, training, coaching, message business, what are the assets? The assets are the products, but those need constant updating. So that's not that valuable of an asset. The asset really is the list. It's the community. Because if you have a list, if you have a community of people that trust you and know you, you can turn that into money.
So actually, first of all, I'm going to come back to Eyes Wide Open in a moment. I'm going to come back to Ali Shanti in a moment. But first, I have to have my own, not confession, but openness about my realization about myself. That in the beginning when I was doing Mixergy, I felt this sense of inadequacy because I wasn't running a software company anymore, because I couldn't really figure out where Mixergy was going because of all these different things. And if someone would have said to me, as you did, I think twice, I can't do the interview, I would have thought, you see, they're saying what you're thinking in your head, which is that your stuff isn't good enough, that your business isn't good enough, that you're not to be taken seriously. And then I would have reacted to it. I would have felt bad towards you for not showing up and not recognize why I was doing it. Once things started to go better, I was able to examine what I was thinking, and then I realized it's not necessarily a reflection of me. Sometimes in this case, it's a positive reflection of me. You care so much about this interview that you want to wait for the right time.
That's right.
It's such a big turnaround. And one of the reasons why I stopped doing live interviews is because that kind of issue really messed with me. When I had a live audience waiting for the guest, I would go into heightened self-questioning mode. Like, oh, did she really not care about this? What is she saying about me? What do all these people now think in reaction to that, and so on?
Yeah.
All right, so.
Let me share one other thing about it.
Yes.
I was still at the point back when we were scheduling those interviews that I thought that I needed to show up in a certain way for interviews, with my hair done and my face made up.
I see.
And so a couple of those times, like the first time, I didn't know it was a video interview, and I was like, oh no, I don't have time to get my hair and makeup done. I've since let go of that, and now I show up as I am. This is me. This is how I am when I, get out of the shower and I just put on a little teeny bit of makeup.
And some feathers.
And some feathers, put the feathers in and my little glitter thing. But this is not this is not a 2-hour job. This is not going to the hair salon, getting the hair blown out, putting the hair piece in. And, I know that now I don't need to show up like that, but that was, I had to get to that place.
So how do you get to that place?
you show up enough as yourself and see that it's okay, and then you keep doing it and keep seeing that it's okay, and keep doing it and seeing that it's okay. And I've also had to come to terms with that I may not do TV again, like traditional TV. I might not be a fit for it anymore. And if that. I did, I would still, by the way, make my hair straight because it really does look better on TV. But I've also had to get to that acceptance of my message may not be a traditional TV message.
TV doesn't want you to go on. And I mean, TV bookers don't want someone to come on who's going to say, go into debt. It sounds irresponsible.
They don't want you to go on and say, stop saving for retirement and stop paying off your debt. Because who makes money by you saving for retirement? The professional finance industry, the financial services industry. They're the only ones that make money, by the way. Not you, them. Who makes money by you paying off your debt? The banks. And who do you think is supporting the media? It's the financial services industry. Far and wide, whatever. So I've realized, okay, I'm very likely going to need to spread this message through alternative means, and I can show up as myself.
And we prefer you this way in alternative means. All right, come on, I gotta ask you about this.
Yeah,
Shanti.
Yes.
Who dat?
So who is this Shanti girl? So really all of this started, and I know that the lawyers are going to be all up in arms about this, but not the ones that love me and really appreciate what I do. But this whole crisis, all of it started with a medicine journey with a plant called ayahuasca. And this was back in 2009. I was certain that everybody was doing it just for recreation until one day, like, I was called to do it. And I did. I sat with a shaman and had this experience where I saw what life could really be like, harmonious and loving and community-oriented and just full of love, and what my life was really like. It was full of conflict and struggle, just strife and you know, pushing. And so I started to work with this medicine. And over this whole period that I've been sharing with you, I worked with this medicine. And one year, January, one New Year's, I can't recall which one at this point, I got a clear message through the medicine that I'm supposed to take on this name, Shanti. That freaked me out. That, like, really freaked me out. I am a left-brain, logical Georgetown law graduate, and I cannot possibly start using the name Shanti. That is too weird. Just asking too much. But some folks had already started calling me Allie. And I said, okay, but I can do Allie Shanti. Okay, nobody's going to call me Shanti, but I can put Shanti on as my last name and I can start going by Allie. Okay. And then the truth is that Allie really was who I was, who I am, is like this very feminine, very soft, very right-brained, very creative part of me that I had constantly pushed away, constantly suppressed because she was really weird. And so my journey more than anything, Andrew, has been about learning to live with and be both Alexis Neely and Allie Shanti.
You know what, and this would all sound so much more, I'm going to say, normal, if you didn't give it a second name, if you said, I just wanted it to become both a conservative person and a free spirit, and no, why the name?
Alexis Neely is a very distinct being, and she is, like, she gets shit done. She builds businesses, and she knows how to make money.
Okay.
And Allie Shanti is different. She's way more juicy and loving, and when I hear people speak to me as either Allie or Alexis, they're speaking to different parts of me. And you're right, it would be way more normal, but I can't do anything just the normal way, apparently. And so, it's been learning to be both Allie and Alexis. I almost hired this very expensive coach when the businesses started making money again. I considered investing in another very high-priced coach, you know, in the $100,000 range. And I didn't hire him because he told me that I needed to kill Alexis Neely. He said, if you really want to be truly successful, Allie, you need to go full force with Allie Shanti and you need to kill Alexis Neely.
I see. This is a good direction for you. You can get the people who are open to someone who's more free-spirited. I see. Right.
Totally. But he used the words, you need to kill Alexis Neely. You need to stop serving the lawyers and you need to kill Alexis Neely. And it was so painful to hear that because I love Alexis Neely. Alexis Neely does incredibly important work in the world and she's got the credibility because Allie Shanti is just another free-spirited hippie chick with big ideas and a lot of heart. But without Alexis Neely, is anybody really going to listen to her message to stop saving for retirement and stop paying off your debt? Or is she totally disregarded? And this message is far too important to allow it to be brought out without the support and backing, full support and backing of Alexis Neely. And so I'm living and learning to live in the both and not hide either one of them. So, you know, lawyers in my programs know about Allie Shanti, and I'm sure they think it's weird. But I think that in many ways they also trust me more because she's not some, you know, person I only bring out on the weekends or at Burning Man. She's totally integrated into my life, my family, my daughter sitting here right on the other side of the camera listening to, you know, this whole thing. I'm really modeling.
How did she feel about it when you decided to start bringing this out?
My kids are 10 and 13 now, so they, you know, they think I'm weird, but they like it. I really believe that they like it. And most of all, I think that they like it because it lets them know that they can be fully who they are, completely and totally who they are. They don't have to hide any parts of themselves from themselves or from me. And honestly, my daughter prides herself on being weird. And if I could have prided myself on being weird when I was in high school, things would have been totally different. The only issue with my high school life was that I had shame about who I really was. And my mom was weird, really weird. You know, I thought, now I think she's great. But I wasn't okay with that because there was no model for okayness with weirdness.
I know what you mean. It was much more black and white. And I have to tell you, it still is very black and white, but when I have dinners or drinks with entrepreneurs, this kind of stuff comes out. Not your thing exactly, of course, but everyone has their own bit of weirdness and there's a hesitation about talking about it. But if I give them room to be themselves without judgment, they say this stuff. My challenge and my mission here with Mixergy is to not put on these interviews that you're supposed to see, but really put on the kind of conversations that I have when I talk to someone in private.
You're doing, I have to say, a phenomenal job. You've gotten me to share things today that I haven't talked about publicly, and I've talked about just about everything publicly. So like you found like the one little nugget of things I haven't.
Is there part of you that's going to feel self-conscious about some of what you said later today?
I don't think so. I'll have like a little bit of a concern of like, oh my God, you know, are some of the lawyers going to see this? But that kind of got ameliorated one day when I was posting on someone's blog. This guy, his blog is Single Dad Laughing, and it's about him being bisexual and being a dad. And he posted something, and I posted on it about coming out to my kids. And I thought it was just being posted on his blog, and it posted on my Facebook.
Ah, right.
And I saw it on my Facebook, and I was like, oh, I should remove this. And then I thought, you know, I'm not going to remove this. This is who I am. And so I posted a comment on it. I said, wow, I didn't know this posted on my Facebook. I was going to remove it, but I decided not to. And one of the lawyers who follows me on that Facebook account, it's my private Facebook account, and she posted a comment. And she said, you think this is the most out there thing that you've ever said? This is
nothing. What do you mean? You came out. It came out as what?
Bisexual.
I see. And you kept saying partner. Is this a woman that
you're with? A male partner.
A male partner. Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, there was a girl in my daughter's school who actually had a transgender sex change at the age of 7. And she gave a whole presentation to her class about it. And so we got to get to have a great conversation about it with my daughter. And she said, Mom, it's normal now. Like, they teach about homosexuality and bisexuality in health class. So the things that we think like aren't normal are actually totally normal to the generations to come. And they're going to think that we were weird for trying to hide stuff. So we're just behind the times, and I'm just getting with the times now. And
is,
helping more,
weird and
helping more
to hide
people
stuff.
Do the same ultimately by modeling it.
I'm looking at my screen. I've got all my notes on everything that you and Jeremy talked, everything that I looked up on you online. I got through everything except for I also keep a checklist as we talk to make sure that I get everything that I promised you that I'd get to. And the one thing that I didn't get to check off is eyes wide open.
Yeah.
Tell me about what eyes wide open life is.
So Eyes Wide Open Life is the business, the vehicle for bringing out this message of living your life and doing business with your eyes wide open. Mm-hmm. And that means having a business model that's in alignment with the truth of who you really are and how you want to be in the world, and building your business with the legal, insurance, financial, and tax foundations that will support you. So talk about like right brain, left brain. One of the things that I teach is legal, insurance, financial, and tax for micro business owners, because part of what almost killed my businesses was not just this weirdo Ali Shanti, but the fact that I didn't know anything about legal, insurance, financial, and tax systems. I was building my business with my eyes tightly shut. And so when things started to fall apart, they really started to fall apart in a big way. And the only reason that I was able to rebuild as easily as I was after the bankruptcy was because I got eyes wide open about legal structures, about all of the financial systems, about tax strategies. And I made about $1 million worth of mistakes to learn. And then I went on to interview lawyers, insurance people, financial people, tax people, to see like, what do we actually really need to know as micro business owners about legal, insurance, financial, and tax? So this business, I couldn't run two businesses. I was like, this is part of the whole letting go, is I'm going to have to let something go. And I'm not letting go of the lawyer business. I love it. There's nobody else who can support these lawyers in the way that I can support them, with both the emerging new economy perspective and the lawyer perspective.
So this is Danielle Seville is going to be running this with Craig.
Yeah. Craig's out of that business too.
He is.
Craig's
so it's just going to be Danielle then.
Yeah. So that was a whole process as well, because Danielle and Craig were doing it together. And Craig is now completely over. He's my partner, by the way. He's completely over on
so
the
this
lawyer
is your partner
side.
Who we were talking about, relationship
yeah.
partner.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And you also work together with him. Oh, I've been emailing with him. That's why I...
You
that's
have?
Why stuck
oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, you have been. Yeah, he's my life and business partner. And he, and we're in an open relationship too, if you want all the scoop.
With your daughter there, you're comfortable saying you're in an open relationship?
Yes. I don't even know if she knows what that means, but yes, I'm totally...
What does that mean?
It means that we're both able to have relationships with other people, that we support each other in having more love in our lives, but we're committed to each other.
But you don't feel guilty if he's with someone else. Sorry, who's there?
My daughter is showing me pictures of cats that she wants to get. 10 more minutes, babe. do I feel jealous? I think you said, do I feel guilty about when he's with somebody else, or do I feel jealous?
Both.
Yes.
Which one?
All of it.
All of it. So
I feel guilty. I feel jealous. My path is a path of feeling more. And we have great containers of support, community, therapists. We are extremely open with each other about what's going on. And we've learned a process of communicating called authentic communication, where we don't have to hold anything back while at the same time being loving. And it's not an easy path. it's a very, very, very hard path.
Do you have an example of a time that you were that you were feeling jealous, and instead of coming out and saying I feel jealous because you weren't aware of it, you said something else?
I'm pretty in touch with my feelings. I can't say that there's a time that I felt it and didn't know it and so didn't say it. But just, an example, like this past weekend, there's a woman that he's involved with, and I felt like he was giving her more attention and energy than he was giving me. And, we're together so much that he, wanted to give her more energy and attention because he only sees her on occasion. And I felt that. I felt really bad. And we, have been in dialogue about it since then and looking at, why is that happening? And we're making a commitment, I think, to making sure that before either one of us is with anybody else, that we make sure we're really in connection. Because the reason that happened is that we'd had a disconnection between the two of us.
What does that mean, a disconnection?
We were like in a disconnected space where we weren't really feeling loving towards each other. We were under-resourced, tired, grumpy, business stuff, just, kind of. And so instead of reconnecting together, his energy went to connect with her, and we're making a commitment to connect with each other before any of that happens. But that's a challenging commitment to make, because the natural desire is to just go wherever it feels best. But we're in a committed relationship, even though we both are open to engaging with other people.
And you were like this before ayahuasca, in an open relationship?
I was always like this. I just suppressed it. When I was 17, I came out to my mom as a lesbian, and she told me it was a phase. And then I was like, I was really mad, actually. But then, went to college and started dating men, and really put that part, behind me. And in some ways, I think part of the reason that I got divorced, and then I was in a long-term relationship with Dave D, actually. And, those relationships, I think, ended partially because I wasn't able to be fully expressed. Dave is, conservative, Republican from Atlanta, and he's like, no.
He's not willing to have his wife go out or his girlfriend go out with girls.
Or anybody other than him. He was like, that's not okay.
What about this? Had to be. We're just now talking about open relationship. I'm looking at your website, and I'm on eyeswideopenlife.com.
Yeah.
You're wearing a shirt, but it doesn't clearly look like it. Is there any concern that people are going to look at this and not think of you as a business person, and you're checking out the site yourself?
I gotta go. I'm not wearing a shirt. I might not actually be wearing a shirt. There was a series of topless photos that I took that you don't see my breasts in them, but I'm definitely naked in them. Is this the one that's in the header?
Yes, and down a little bit below in that blog post where it's signed you and Daniel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I am. I'm topless in that.
You're topless there.
I am topless.
So now, isn't there a concern that people are going to look at that and not think of you as a business person, but think of you as, for sex?
Yeah.
And I guess. You know what? Look at me. Of course there is, and this is what you had to battle. This is what you decided. You're not going to live hiding anymore, and you're just going to fully express yourself.
Totally.
And that means in everything, even in stuff like this that I'm looking at. This is no longer an issue for you because you've decided it. You're just going to allow yourself to be yourself instead of feeling like you're constrained by what other people's judgments.
Andrew, there's going to be some people that dismiss me as a result of that, and I've gotten deeply, deeply, deeply okay with that. I'm okay with that. Here's what I realized is that everything that we most want is on the other side of our fear. And so if somebody's dismissing me, it's because they're afraid. Either that or they're just totally not resonant with me, which is fine. But if they're dismissing me because they're afraid, then I actually have what they really want. And I'm going to keep being me fully, holding that out as a model for them. Because one day they're going to come back to it and they're going to say, wow. Thank you. Thank you for maintaining that for me so that I could come around to what I really wanted, my true desire, even though I was really afraid of it in the beginning. And I'm totally all about supporting that and helping people to move through their fears and have what they most want. And I have to do it in order to support people to that.
This is one of the best interviews I've ever done. I have all these extra questions, but I realize that they're going to be way out of way outside my focus of the site.
I'm taking you way off track, huh?
I love that you are. I love that we got personal. I always like when guests were willing to go personal. And I'm really grateful to you for doing that.
Thank you. Well, the one last thing that I wanted to make sure that we cover is this thing with Danielle. Because in order for me to see the work of Eyes Wide Open continue, the Money Map and Lyft, without me having to be the one to run the business, which means hiring people and managing them, because that's ultimately what it takes to really build a business. You've got to hire people and manage them. But I couldn't do it. My archetype is star creator.
Okay.
And that means I need to be creating. And in order to do that, I had to give Danielle total control over the business. I don't recommend this for everyone, but I'd love to just let you know that there's this model that I created where she's got a non-exclusive license to leverage MoneyMap and Lyft. She pays me a consulting and licensing fee, me and another company that actually owns the intellectual property. And she could do with it what she wants. If she doesn't capitalize on it, I can always capitalize on it because it's a non-exclusive license. But if she does, I'm totally happy for her to do that. So in many ways, I gave away the company. When I was trying to negotiate with her that she's going to get paid and then she's going to buy in, it felt very old economy. We were on opposite sides. Once I gave her the company and asked for exactly what I wanted, which is my Money Map number, and knew that no matter what, she's going to pay me that amount, and maybe I'll get more, maybe I won't. It'd be great if I did, but if I don't, it's fine. I could let go of this idea of having to control everything. I could let go of this idea of ownership. And instead, just focus on the value that I'm providing and receiving what I need in exchange for that value. So I want to open people's perspectives about how you can let go, give more than you think you possibly can. In this case, me really giving the whole company, and as a result, receive more on the other side.
All right. The website is eyeswideopenlife.com. Thank you so much for doing this interview.
Yes. Well, you are absolutely welcome. Okay. I have to say one more thing. I know you're
Hit me.
If people want to see how does this actually all work?
Yes.
One of our programs in Eyes Wide Open Life is we let people come behind the scenes and watch our
team. As you build up the business.
As we build the business. Yeah.
And where do we see that?
You can check that out at eyeswideopenlife.com/membership, and you'll see the options for joining membership there. And actually, we modeled you, Andrew.
Oh, look at that. The same design, except you improved on my design.
Well, we made it pretty with our colors and added a couple of other things. But really the foundation was looking at Mixergy and how you were laying out your design. I really loved it. And so we've modeled it a little bit, and it'll shift and change. But
I like it.
The bottom line
is... look at the very... I'm not even going to say it. I'm going to let people go check out the last line of that page for themselves. I love it.
We love modeling what we see really works, and you're definitely a model for us of how to really show up online and provide tremendous amount of value. So
thank you so much. Yeah. You guys, if you've ever seen any of the pages on my site, you should check out eyeswideopenlife.com/membership. Alexis, thank you so much for doing this interview. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.
Okay. Bye.